Blog Talk Radio.
Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Welcome, everyone, to Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Sheila English, and this week's guest has a new book out, has gotten quotes like this one from Michael Connelly, says this book held me hostage until the last page.
Ooh, chilling.
I know, I love that. I absolutely love that. and of course, saying Broadway style, the best-selling author Brad Meltzer. Welcome to Brad Parks. How are you, Brad?
Well, I'm doing great. How are you?
Well, I think I'm doing better than some. I heard that Harlan Coben said that the snow is so tall where he's at that it can officially ride all of the amusement park rides. And I thought...
And you know, Harlan's about 6'5", so when he says something is tall, you can believe it for sure.
See, he's like, you guys are very similar, and you guys have this very wicked sense of humor that I just love it. It's like, you know, you could be talking, and then all of a sudden, there's just some little zinger that comes in there.
So, I think it's a Jersey guy thing. It's a defense mechanism. If you don't have a little bit of a sense of humor, you won't survive in the state.
Well, that's true. True, I like that. You are also back now. Are you in Virginia? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, I'm in Virginia now. My books are set in New Jersey, and I was born in New Jersey and lived there for about 10 years. But yes, we live in Virginia now. So I go back and forth, but I keep enough of a foot in the Jersey world that I don't lose that kind of natural cynicism and sarcasm that are necessary for survival in the Garden State.
Now I've heard you can never once you've got it. It's like riding a bike, right? Jersey just never leaves.
Oh yeah, you can turn it on and off though. It's like, what do the psychologists call it? Code switching. It takes a little bit of time. Like suddenly, if you find yourself in the Midwest, where everyone's very polite and everyone's very nice, and you know you're in a convenience store and someone says something like, "Thank you very much, sir. Have a nice day." You can kind of like, it takes you a second to go, "Oh, he's not kidding. He really does want me to have a nice day." You know, versus in New Jersey, someone says that to you. It's like, yeah, buddy, blow it out your ear, okay? Yeah, because they're just making fun of you if they're like that. But no, okay, that's right. I'm in Milwaukee now, so therefore people really are nice here. Okay, there we go. But it's always there.
Now, real quick for our listeners, you can call into the show and chat with us if you'd like. It's 646-200-4071. And now you can also stop by. I put up the chat room for those people who'd like to go and send us questions that way or make some comments. And also, if you would like to check out Brad's website while we're chatting, you can go over there, and you're going to want to. And I'll tell you a little bit more about the website here pretty soon because there's some very interesting things on the site. His site is at bradparksbooks.com. And you may want to head over there and check that out. Now, though I'm sure people are intrigued by the whole singing to Brad Meltzer thing, which we're going to get to, I promise. Let's go ahead and start at the beginning. Your debut book, Faces the Gone. Give us your elevator pitch for the book and tell us, you know, how'd the book do kind of overall?
Well, the elevator pitch goes like this. It starts with four people shot in the back of the head and left for dead in a vacant lot in Newark, New Jersey. Cheerful, no? We then meet our protagonist, who is a wisecracking Jersey guy by the name of Carter Ross, who is an investigative reporter for the Newark-based newspaper, the Newark Eagle Examiner. And it's up to Carter to figure out who these people were, why they were killed, and, of course, who done it. And pretty quickly, we meet a cast of characters who help him out, and then things start exploding, and we kind of stumble along until our conclusion. The book was actually based on a real crime I had covered as a reporter myself in 2004, a real quadruple homicide. And it ended up doing, and this is, by the way, this is not false modesty because, Sheila, as you'll get to know me, I'm really not modest at all. So there's nothing to be false about. But I'm really actually still a little bit in shock as to how well the book did. It got a starred review from Library Journal, which is very nice. It sold through its print run in 9 days,
wow.
Which was Yeah, I know. It's like, wow. I mean, we were literally out of books. I mean, we sold out Amazon.com. Like, I didn't know it was possible to sell out Amazon.com, but we did. And it got a nice mention in the New York Times, and it just sort of took off. And then when award season came around, it won the Seamus Award for Best First PI Novel, and it won the Nero Award, which is given by the a literary society that venerates all things Nero Wolfe. And my agent looked it up, so I'm going to trust her that it's true. It became the first book ever in the history of the entire world to win both the Seamus and the Nero Award. So,
oh, wow.
It's
you
great,
know,
actually.
That's so amazing. And, you know, just to kind of put it in perspective, you know, there are just thousands and thousands of books. And you just want to talk about thrillers and mysteries. There are still thousands of that particular genre that comes out every year. So, you know, as a debut author, I think you would be thrilled that Library Journal said, you know, mentioned the book and said something about the book, and now you go on to winning these very prestigious awards as well.
It's crazy because I never really, I don't know, I never really was trying to win awards. I mean, I think there are things that writers can do for other writers. It's essentially like showing off, you know, that like, hey, look at me, I'm a good writer. And I never really wanted to do those kind of things. I mean, I really wanted to make it about the experience for the reader. So the award attention was, well, it was gratifying, obviously, but it was also a little surprising just because I didn't set out to write award-winning books. You know, I was trying to write entertaining books, basically.
Well, I think that I know as a reader myself, I'm actually influenced by award-winning books, and I'll tell you why. I have such limited time, and I think I represent a lot of people. You know, there's so much going on, and you've got your family, and you've got your work, and you've got, you know, all these other things that are going on, that your time becomes so valuable, and I know a lot of people who feel their time is even more valuable than their money. I mean, they'll pay for somebody else to do something for them. I mean, it really has gotten to that point. And I have just gotten to where there are so many books, there's so much to choose from, and there's a lot of good books. I mean, in all fairness, there's a lot of really good books out there. But, you know, it's like you want to feel like if I'm going to not just spend the money on the book, there's that aspect, but more important to me, if I'm going to spend my time sitting down away from all these other things, you have that escapism, you really want to be entertained. And to me, when I see quotes like the one that you got from Michael Connelly, if I take a look at those awards and I think, okay, you know, you're kind of playing the odds now, and the odds are this book is going to be something that's really going to appeal to me. And I do. I really do take those things into consideration. So when the awards are nice. I think they're really great. I mean, I know, you know, for the authors, it's really nice to, you know, be validated and to have somebody, you know, outside your mom and dad and family and wife say, wow, you're a great writer. I mean, it really is nice to have that. But from the reader's perspective, it really does make a difference between, am I going to buy this book or am I going to buy this book?
Right, right.
You know?
And yeah, I think, yeah, from the author standpoint, awards are absolutely meaningless beauty pageants until you actually win one. And then you're like, oh, this is the best thing ever.
right.
But I do see how, I mean, winning these awards have definitely opened some doors for me. And because, it is sort of like a little badge. I mean, when you say Seamus Award, when you say Nero Award, I mean, these are things that people have heard of, they recognize. So it does kind of give you some instant credibility in the eyes of readers, of bookstore owners, of librarians, kind of the whole world of people who revolve and love books. And that's – so, yeah, it's this one little thing that says, hey, you know, maybe this book isn't terrible. And, you know, Lord knows we can all use that.
Now, and I think I misspoke earlier saying the book is out. The book is actually out on February 1st. Is that right?
First. Tuesday.
February the 1st. That's right.
It's really just right around the corner. You know, but go to your local bookstore and bribe them to go in the back stock room, and they'll grab it for you. I mean, who are we kidding? This isn't,
we don't want to do
I'm
that.
I'm not writing
the
Harry Potter book here. There are not going to be lines of people at midnight.
Well,
but yes, it will
reorder.
Be out very, very soon.
Yeah. Now, so you have the new book that's coming out, which I'm very interested in, Eyes of the Innocent. Tell us what that book is about, and what brought you to write this story.
Believe it or not, mattresses. This is true. Yeah, it's funny. Where does fiction come from? And this really did start for me. I was a reporter with the Newark Star-Ledger in Newark, New Jersey. This was early 2008, and I found when I was driving around the city, I kept seeing mattresses everywhere. You know, leaning up against houses and thrown out in the curb and up against dumpsters. It's like, what's going on? Like, why are all these mattresses? So I started asking around, and I found out that it was foreclosures. These were people who had been ordered out of their house by a sheriff's sale. They either didn't have cars or they had very small cars. They had to leave in a hurry, and they were just leaving the mattresses behind. And it sort of ended up, you know, what we now know, of course, is that this is the beginning of an absolutely enormous and unprecedented wave of mortgage foreclosures that not only took the housing market down with it, it took the entire global economy down with it. But this was really kind of the first signs of it we were seeing in Newark. And so it led to me doing about 3 months' worth of reporting about subprime mortgages and house flipping and all this kind of sordid stuff that was going on during the real estate boom. And I realized there were great stories to be told there, because certainly nothing good comes of a house that goes vacant in a tough, gritty urban area like Newark. And so that was kind of the launching point for Eyes of the Innocent. And then we get into, house flipping and arson and a guy who likes to kill people with nail guns and all sorts of, wonderful, heartwarming stuff.
Well, I was interested when I was, because I get your the scoop, the newsletter that
right.
you have that comes out. And, and it said something about flipping, or maybe I saw that on your website. And it's one of those things that you don't think about until somebody really brings it up. You know, what happens to those people? And
right.
are they bitter? And where do they go? And what happens?
Right.
You know, it's like I never really thought about that. And I could absolutely see somebody getting mad enough to kill over something like that. It's like, oh, well, yeah. You know, maybe I should read that in case I need.
Well, it's the old economic axiom is that everything works in an up market, but then as soon as the market goes bad, nothing works. And so, yeah, people end up getting very angry at each other, and people end up losing a lot of money. And that's a perfect setting for people getting mad enough to really get at each other and kill each other.
Yeah. Now, your book is a mystery, which it says right there on the cover. Now, what makes this a mystery as opposed to like a traditional suspense thriller, or do you consider it both?
Yeah, it really is both. I mean, I kind of go with the definition of a mystery is a book that seeks to solve a crime, whereas a thriller is a book that seeks to prevent a crime. And there are certainly elements of both in this. It starts off with a house fire that claims the life of two young boys that we quickly discover is actually arson. And so that is kind of the mystery of, how did this happen? Who could do such a monstrous thing? But then inevitably, Carter Ross, the protagonist, starts running afoul of some very nasty people, and the people working with him start running afoul of those nasty people, and so they quickly fall into danger as well. So that's where we get kind of the more thrillerish elements. So, it really, that's why does St. Martin's Press choose to call it a mystery versus a thriller? Who knows? I think probably in this day and age, probably most books have elements of both. I mean, maybe there's the odd cozy that's still, there has been murder most foul. Let us all have tea and discuss it until we figure out who. But I think most books these days do kind of have the protagonist with that element of danger and kind of seek to get your heart thumping in that good thrillerish kind of way.
So now this is your second novel, and you've gone from aspiring writer. Well, actually, you were a journalist.
Yeah.
Then you decided you wanted to write novels, so you were an aspiring writer for that. then to debut author, and now you're an established writer. What was that journey like?
Well, I like how you've made me an established author already, Sheila. I mean, gosh, all I have to do is come out with two books? That was easy. I was thinking it'd be 5 or 10 or something like that. I'm actually, in all seriousness, I'm having so much fun with this whole thing. For me, writing mysteries was something that I maybe thought I would do, you know, after a long journalism career, and I was looking for something in semi-retirement, and I would kind of sit down and, you know, dotter out a few little mysteries, and wouldn't that be fun? It never really occurred to me that I could kind of live that dream now. But then the reality was that the collapse of the newspaper industry kind of left me looking for a new career. And so it was like, well, gosh, let's try this out. And it really is. I mean, sometimes I feel like I'm on the lam, like I'm leading this must be totally illegal life because I'm just having way too much fun. But the authorities have not caught up to me yet. So, you know, with every book that comes out and with every year I'm able to continue doing it, it's just one more year on the lam and, you know, one more year on the road and having a great time. And, you know, maybe I'll have to grow up and get serious and get a real job one of these days. But, man, I'm sure enjoying life at large for the time being.
Well, tell me now, who inspires you? Like, what authors or what people? Is there anyone that you talk to or that you read their books and it just really lights a fire for your own muse?
You know, okay, this may be sacrilege for an author to say this, but I really actually don't believe in the muse. I mean, I think it's something the authors can talk about and write about or whatever, but to me, and maybe this is because I have chosen to do this as a profession, there's almost not the luxury of waiting around for the muse or looking for the muse or is the muse going to sit on my shoulder? I mean, you know, it really does become... This is what I do for a living, and whether I'm feeling it on a given day or not feeling it. I mean, you know, the guy who is checking out your groceries at Walmart, you know, he doesn't get to wait around and wait for the muse to inspire him or anything like that. And neither do I. You know, I mean, I really, if I'm inspired by anything, it's the fact that I have two young children who are both very smart, just like their mother. And someday they're going to want to go to good colleges. So that is really, if I need inspiration for anything,
there you go.
And knowing that they're, you know, my children are very young. So, you know, 18 years from now, you know, when college tuition will be $90,000 a year or God knows whatever it's going to be, that's inspiration plenty enough for me. I don't know.
You know, and I think that's a fantastic point because I think there are a lot of people out there who, you know, they're not in the industry and you think, oh, you know, this person's a writer. That sounds like such a glamorous job and you get to tell stories. But the fact of the matter is it really truly is, it's a career. There's work that has to be done. There's research, which is not always a fun job. I mean, you have to do things that aren't as fun, but they have to be done and you have to spend time on your book, maybe on days you don't feel so well, or I mean, just like anyone else.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's remarkable? It's like you don't. I don't want to make it sound like I'm a coal miner here or something like that. Like, oh boy, I got to go write 1,000 words today. But I mean, I do. That's my regimen. I write 1,000 words every day at a minimum, and that is what I do. And what's interesting is that when the book is all said and done, and I go back, I literally cannot tell the, quote, good days from the bad days. You know, the days where I just had to strap myself in the chair and I would really rather be anywhere else and, oh, my God, I'm the worst writer on the planet versus those days when I'm like, hey, I'm pretty good at this. This is flowing easy. You know, once you're through 90,000 or 100,000 words, you know, was I in a good mood when I wrote word number 40,000? Was I feeling self-doubt? You don't know. So, I mean, it does kind of validate the idea that if you are, don't wait around for the muse. Just sit your butt in the chair and get your fingers on the keyboard and start typing.
You know, I think the very first time that I ever went to, it was like a writer's workshop boot camp, I think is what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there, and there was probably about 100 people in there. It was pretty packed. And one of the first things they asked is, you know, how many people, you know, want to be a writer, that's what they want for their career. And, of course, the majority of everybody raises their hands. And he says, how many people have actually finished a complete book? There were like five.
Mm-hmm.
Five.
Yeah.
out of 100 people who had actually completed the end, to the end. And it, I think that really says something about, you do have to have perseverance. And like you said, I mean, you have to sit down and you have to just make it happen.
Right.
So now I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk about your sense of humor, because that's part of the reason I love to get these newsletters. I actually look forward to them. When I see yours come in, I'll go ahead and I click on it. This is the one that I just got. I'm going to read a little bit from it because I want people to get an idea of how great these newsletters are. So I'm just going to read from the newsletter. It says, "It was an exciting day in the offices of BradParksBooks.com when the February 1st release date closing, with the February 1st release date closing fast, the first copies of Brad's new novel, Eyes of the Innocent, arrived from the warehouse. Brad wasn't around. We think he was off washing the Barnes & Noble fiction buyer's car again, so we made the executive decision to crack open the box and take a gander. Look at this book," said Sarah, the smart intern, caressing the glossy dust jacket. "It really is gorgeous." "All except for the author photo," said Zach, the silly intern. "I swear, Brad needs a makeover before he goes out on tour." And it just goes from there. It's like, I love these little vignettes, and you really kind of, you know, make fun of yourself. It's very lighthearted. It's entertaining.
You know, those are my interns. Those are my interns, Sheila. I can't control what the interns do. You know, they're just they have a life of their own, and you know, I try to stop them from making fun of me, but of course it doesn't really work much. So now, and I have had people ask me, "Do you really have interns?" You know, because of course the interns, you know, they're sending out these newsletters out, and the interns do this and that. And I say, yes, I do. They exist only in my mind, but I really do have interns. And I just, you know, I think it might be, I mean, look, I may have a character flaw. Like, I'm really pretty incapable of being too serious about anything for too much time. And so I think, you know, whether it's my books, you know, I kind of, as I'm writing my book, if I've gone about 6, 8, 10,000 words and I feel like nothing's been really funny, I'll just throw in a stupid scene in there just for the fun of it. You know, just because I like to laugh when I write and I like to have a good time. And so I figure people reading it will feel the same way. And I think it's the same with the interns. You know, I think at that point I'd probably received enough author newsletters not to cast aspersions on some of my colleagues, but some of them were pretty damn dull. And I just kind of thought, well, let's kind of liven things up and, more than anything, not be afraid to get stupid and not take myself too seriously. And, well, so the interns were born. And now that they've come to life, I really can't stop them. They really sort of are like these characters that that just sort of take control of everything and run my life in many ways.
Now, of course, now I'm going to use the whole humor aspect to segue into a little something that you did at Thriller Fest during the debut author breakfast. tell us about your Brad Meltzer song.
Yeah, I'm never going to live that down, am I?
No, never.
Like that. Well, yeah. So, debut author breakfast, just to set the scene for those of you know who are listening on the radio, so they can't see it. Of course, this is one of the highlights of Thriller Fest. Is they let the debut authors. There were I think 20 of us in the most recent class. They prop us up at a breakfast in front of about 250 or 300 people, and they give us each 1 minute to pitch our book. Now, I kind of know this is the setup going in, and I also know that my last name starts with a P. So, you know, that makes me like, what, 12th, 13th, 14th in line, and no matter how charming and wonderful and witty the 12 people before me has been, you know, chances are by the time we get to, you know, book pitch number 13, people are going to be drooling in their Cheerios because they're so damn bored of hearing another book pitch. So I just kind of figured I'd do something fun, and I knew Brad Meltzer was a pretty good sport, and so the next thing I knew I was serenading Brad Meltzer to Maria from West Side Story.
Now, I would not be a very good host if I didn't play at least a little snippet for my listeners.
Oh, boy.
Just a little bit. I'm pulling this off of your website, and just want to tell people I'm just going to play a little bit, And if you want to hear the whole thing, you have to go to bradsparksbooks.com.
And if you don't want to hear it, turn down your computer right now. Just bump down the volume for about the next 30 seconds.
The most beautiful bald head you'll ever see. Brad Meltzer, Brad Meltzer, Brad Meltzer, Brad Meltzer.
Now, I just wanted to give just a taste of that to everybody.
Yeah.
And I know Barbara Vay from Publishers Weekly just had the best time with that. And she put together a little video that's over on your website. And I'm not even going to tell you how many times I've shared that with people. But
well, it was a lot of fun. It's also, Brad was a really terrific sport about it. I think I even went and rubbed his bald head when it was over. At least
we
got to
do it for luck.
Well, yeah, exactly. And, hey, what the heck? He's had how many number one bestsellers? Might as well, right? You know, if any of it rubs off on me, terrific.
And did you see he's got his own show, television show?
Yeah. You know, strangely, I didn't get the casting call for it, though. I don't know. But, you know, Brad, call me. Come on, what's wrong?
I know. What's up? Well, I've actually watched it a few times. There was one about the assassination of Lincoln that was really good, and they had one this week. I didn't get to see it, but I recorded it, and apparently his team got arrested. So it's like, Brad, living on the edge.
It gets
I'm
going
to watch
that.
Now, tell me something. How important is it to be fearless in promoting yourself and allowing yourself to stand out from the crowd?
You know, I'm not sure if I ever thought of it like that. I mean, I probably decided pretty early on in this process that I was just going to kind of be myself and let the chips fall where they may. I realize I can come off a little strong for some people. I'm a little over-enthusiastic at times. My sense of humor is not for everyone. I get that. But, you know, the thing about books is you don't need everyone to like your book. You just need enough people to like your book. And so I kind of figured if I was just myself and kind of authentically me, I mean, in this day and age, I think people are just so savvy. They know when you're fake. You know, they know when you're a fraud. And so it's like, look, this is just kind of, for better or worse, who I am. It's not like I'm some wallflower the rest of the time and I break out of my shell just to sell a few books. Like, I really like singing to people. So, you know, whether that's Brad Meltzer or just some, you know, poor unsuspecting woman at karaoke on Wednesday nights, it's something I enjoy doing. So I guess I've never thought of it necessarily as fearlessness as much as, just being good old stupid me and seeing what happens.
Now, I just saw that we have about 2 minutes left, so there are a couple of things that I just wanted to make sure that we included. Where can our listeners go to meet you, to find out more about you or interact with you? Where can we send them?
Well, let's see here. I'm pretty much the most easily stalked man on the internet because I'm everywhere. So at Twitter, I'm Brad_Parks. On Facebook, I'm Brad Parks Books on Facebook. You can go to my website, sign up for my newsletter, and just send me an email if you'd like to at brad@bradparksbooks.com. So there's lots of ways to interact with me. This is the good thing, Sheila. I'm not famous. So I have plenty of time to answer reader email and all that other kind of stuff.
By the time you get to be
Brad Meltzer or Harlan Coben, like, you can't do it anymore. But when you're Brad Parks, you got lots of time. Write me an email. I'll write back.
Well, Brad, I really want to thank you for joining us tonight. I know it was short notice. I really, really appreciate you coming in and chatting with us. I love the news. I do not subscribe to a lot of newsletters, for reasons that I'm sure you and I both imagine.
Sure.
But, you know, as soon as I got yours, it's just nice. It's nice to take a break and have a little chuckle, and then I find out what's going on. I do stalk you a little bit over on Facebook. So I thought,
I
know his book's coming out. I bet I could talk him into coming over. So, and you're a great sport. So thank you very much for joining.
Well, Sheila, thanks very much for having me on.
And I want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio. You can download the podcast on Blog Talk Radio or on iTunes or any other of those big online sites. We're pretty much everywhere. The show will be available within an hour after it airs, and you can also follow up. I'm going to have a blog put up with links in case you'd like to be able to link over to some of these great videos that I'm going to share with you at readersentertainment.tv/radio. I'm your host, Sheila English, and one more time, thank you again for joining us.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe, and welcome to our circle.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.